Folks, welcome to Manager Tools. Normally, Mike does this introduction, but this is a bit of an unusual situation. We had a cast all recorded and ready to go. It's called Effective Meetings, Anything Else. And Mike and I just found out, I'm recording this Friday afternoon, that our longtime audio engineer, an extended member of the Manager Tools family, who's just a wonderful guy and a brilliant engineer, Paul Figiani, has to spend some time with his dad, who's just been admitted to the hospital. And so Mike and I were a little bit worried that this podcast for Monday would be delayed, and we thought we'd release a Hall of Fame cast, and as soon as Paul can come back to us, then we'll pick up the pace with the cast we've already recorded but hasn't yet been post-produced. So the Hall of Fame cast that we're going to provide for you is Effective Meetings, which will go very well with the cast right behind it, which will be Effective Meetings, Anything Else. And I would encourage you, we have not missed a single cast or been late with a single cast in 16 years. I would encourage you to say a prayer, have a thought for Paul Figiani and his father and his whole family. Thanks. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Manager Tools Podcast for Monday, August 1st, 2005. Hi, this is Michael Ozan. Welcome to today's show. For those of you longtime listeners, we're on our seventh show by now. You know that Manager Tools is a podcast focused on providing you specific tools for improving your managerial skills and thereby improving your organizational performance. Now, we don't like to talk a lot about theory, but rather on specific behaviors, and today's show is no exception. Today, we're going to start a short two- or three-part series on how to improve the effectiveness of meetings. Before we start, however, we have a number of tools or documents on the website that you might just want to go look at. In addition to a rather detailed outline of what we're going to discuss today, you'll also find a meeting agenda template that incorporates the topics we're going to discuss on today's show. Just go to www.manager-tools.com and you can download those tools from the tools section. So without further ado, let's get on with it. Well, welcome everybody to Manager Tools. Today I got a special treat. I have a guest here in the Michael Ozan Studios in Burke, Virginia. Like you all to welcome Mark Horseman.
Hi, guys.
Mark, how you doing?
Good, Mike.
We're actually together. This will be the first podcast we've done with when we're both in the same room.
So it'll be interesting. All the others have been by phone.
This should be interesting. Mark and I will actually be able to look at each other as we're talking, which is going to be different.
Whether we want to or not.
Whether we want to, yes. So I think today we're going to talk about why meetings don't work. This is going to be your get-out-of-jail-free card. I think most people's experience on meetings is not a good one. And we're going to talk about today a little bit on how we're going to be able to improve that for you. Before we do that, though, let's do a little housekeeping. We have a couple emails and posts on the blog that we'd like to answer. First one was from Greg.
Greg had a couple of great questions. Really appreciated his email. And in fact, Greg was one of the ones that said he's going to refer us to friends. Isn't that right?
Yeah, some of his fellow managers.
Greg, shout out to you. Thank you. We appreciate you doing that. If we're providing you value, we hope that you'll share us with other folks. One thing Greg did say is that he felt like he didn't have good handwriting and so he could type much faster. I just want to caution everybody again. Please don't be caught typing in your one-on-ones. Whether it's fast or not, whether it's neater or not, it sends a very bad signal. We have tried it many, many times, and almost every manager says they get negative feedback about it. And in fact, the purpose of one-on-ones is not about you. It's not about making it easy for you. It's about making it better for your direct reports. And they don't like you typing because they may, in fact, think that you're answering emails. Believe it or not, I know you're not. But they think you are, and typing takes away from their perception of your listening, and their perception is everything. Greg asked another question. He had two directs, I think, wasn't that? Isn't that it?
He has two directs and seven total people in his organization.
Seven folks that report to those two?
Right.
Okay. And Greg said, hey, listen, because I don't have that many, and because I'm going to be involved in their annual review or at least setting their salaries, I want to reach down and go ahead and do one-on-ones with not only my two directs, but all seven of their directs.
Well, I think it was his question, whether or not he should be doing one-on-ones with his directs or with the entire team of seven people. I think one person had a couple of people working for him, and the other team leader had three people working for him.
My general answer to that is no. There are exceptions. I mean, there really are exceptions, but generally speaking, the answer is no. If you want to develop your directs, the thing to do is spend a month doing one-on-ones with them, teach them the format, and then expect them to do the one-on-ones with their folks. Now, they can still do skip levels. Greg can still do skip levels and get with his folks maybe once a month, get everybody together, or do some skip level one-on-ones, maybe breakfast or lunch or something like that. That's great. We want to increase the communication. But generally, you don't want to send a message to your directs that this is a powerful format, but I don't trust you with it.
Right, or set up a situation where the guys at the very bottom are going to feel like they have a route around their leaders, or the team leaders feel that you know they're continually being questioned and second-guessed by their subordinates.
My boss knows more about my team than I do.
Yeah, that's not good.
And it's generally a fallacy to say, well, I'm involved in their annual review or their salary determination, so therefore I want to be involved. Because generally, a couple of people up the chain of command are going to be involved in the salary decisions. Even at the middle, upper levels, it's not one person above that gets to make the final choice. So it's the person who actually writes the annual review, I think, is where we start with who should be doing it. And if you ask Mike, let's say Mike in this situation reports to Mark, if Mike would say, yeah, Mark's my boss, then Mark is the one that Mike should be having a one-on-one with. If Mark reports to Greg, Greg may want to, but generally we'd say, no, let Mike and Mark do the one-on-one. And then the last question he asked was, you know, sometimes we hire consultants or contractors before we staff up and go full time with somebody. Should I have one-on-ones with them? And the answer to that is yes as well. If they contribute to your team's success, yes, you want to have one-on-ones with them. Sometimes we can get away with doing those every other week. Although if they're sitting right alongside my team and they're doing essentially the same work and they're as critical as anybody else, I would say do it as often as the people on your direct who are employees, with an exception that because you usually wouldn't talk about their future careers with them, I would go ahead and make the half hour 15 minutes for them and then 15 minutes for you. And it would be much more project and work focused. You still want to know their kids' names. You still want to get to know them. But it's a little bit different because, of course, you're not talking about their five-year career plans and how you can develop and what kind of resources are available in the company to help them grow in their career.
Right, and you'll want to be cognizant of treating your contractors different than your employees. I'll go back to the Microsoft suit. So there are some things, but I wouldn't that you'd want to treat employees different than contractors. But I wouldn't use this to make that distinction.
Exactly.
As long as you want performance from these folks, you're going to have to give them feedback just like you would employees.
As an external contractor, I am amazed at how many times I'm working with three or four other people, facilitating them, leveraging them, they're leveraging me and my background and so on, and the boss is meeting with them and not with me, and I absolutely feel left out of the loop. And I'm actually providing significant value to the tune of $100,000 to $200,000 worth of consulting services in a year or even in 6 months, and I'm not in the loop on some stuff.
Yeah.
And they say, well, you're an external person. We can't teach you that. I said, you know, I have the salaries of every single person in the company on my laptop. I have the corporate strategy. I have the human resources strategy. What are you keeping from me?
Right.
Now, I don't mean to suggest, I'm not a disgruntled external resource at all. I'm just saying that that's a good reason. The contractors or consultants are going to enjoy that connection with you as well.
Right. Right. Okay. And then we got another from the Contrarian.
The Contrarian, I love that. Yes, exactly. He sent a note saying that you know, the feedback method takes practice. He gave an example of somebody had done something he didn't like, and he went up and told him, "Hey, thanks a lot." And he got a little short with him, and they came back and said, "Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry I ticked you off, but the end result was less than a great feeling." And it's because he knew intellectually the feedback model. But in the heat of the moment, he may say something a little bit sharp, a little bit direct, that's more about the person and more about how he's feeling rather than about the employee. So to the contrarian, I'll tell you, you're not alone. I teach the feedback model, and I still slip sometimes. And what I find is a little bit of practice over and over and over again, even on small things, particularly on good, positive feedback, where it's easier to think about because you're not so emotionally engaged in the negativity. Practice, 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 and it gets to be second nature. And then when you really need to do it, you flow right into it, and it works real well. But he's right. Practice is everything.
Yeah, and if you think that management skills are natural, there's natural leaders or born leaders or not. If you fall into that trap, then you'll get a little concerned the fact that you didn't get it at the right time. But you know, I used to compete in Taekwondo, and the first tournament I went to, I didn't do terribly. terribly well.
Really?
Yeah, really.
We know how great a manager you are, so yeah.
But
we're shocked.
But if I had thought that it was supposed to come natural and didn't practice, I'd never get better.
I'm working with a billion-dollar consulting firm now. The CEO is a client. I'm working with a number of his directs, and we'll probably roll something out. And they have specific ways to engage their clients. They have ways to bill their clients. They have formal accounting procedures. They have formal billing procedures. They have formal logistical and travel procedures. They have ways to create bids and proposals, and they have all kinds of things. And they do not have a management protocol, how they interact, how they develop their own talent. And essentially, feedback is just one of those tools in the management protocol toolbox, if you will. And we've got to get good at that, at those basics, if we really want to deliver for clients or whatever the case might be.
Good. All right. We had some other feedback, and we'll get to those on a future show. But for the sake of time here, we'll move on to meetings. Yeah. Now, we've joked about kind of being your get out of jail free card, but but you know, if, like everybody here on this call, I think we've sat in on meetings that are not terribly effective, seem like a waste of time, and you just wish you were anywhere else but this jail of a meeting. So. Why do you think meetings work, though?
I got to tell you, the thing that's amazing is how often I read in technology articles about Trios and BlackBerries and everything else, and what everybody talks about is putting them underneath the desk at meetings. It's just a given. It's no longer even it's a joke. The fact is, everybody knows meetings are unproductive, and so we're playing Tetris, or we're sending email, or we're responding to an SMS message on our phone.
People don't even put them under the desk anymore. No, that's right. I mean, yeah. It's you know, nobody. Yeah.
Or at a teleconference. I'm amazed how often I'm in somebody's office. I'm put on a teleconference with a client. We got five or six different offices all around the country. We got 15 people, all of whom are making $100,000 a year and up. And we're on mute the entire time, and I'm talking to my client about something totally separate. I said, aren't we supposed to be on the teleconference? He said, yeah, these things are terrible. I said, well, yeah, the reason they're terrible is everybody's got it on mute. Why doesn't somebody step up and actually contribute, deliver, follow the agenda, if there is one, which there never is, of course.
You want to know a secret for figuring out how effective your meeting and how well people are paying attention?
Tell me.
Is, assuming everybody's not on mute, is just listen for the number of IM instant messenger chimes in the background.
Ooh,
especially if you're the one talking, and all of a sudden you hear all these IMs going around, generally you know you said something not too bright.
Yeah, not so good. Yeah, I'll tell you another thing, too. People always come late. It amazes me. Look, the meeting's supposed to be at 8, be there on time. I think some of it's a little bit of a power thing. I don't have to be at your 8 o'clock meeting. I can show up at 8:10 and you don't have enough power to get me in trouble. That's one thing. So I don't know. And then what else? People leave early. Or even worse, of course, not only they arrive late, but then the meeting's supposed to be an hour long and it runs an hour and a half. Like, wait a minute, I have another meeting to go to. Is that why I'm late to the previous meeting? Because I had another meeting that kept me late?
Right, exactly.
Time, just the whole issue of time drives me crazy.
Well, sometimes people just, you know, it drives me crazy when people, you're having a meeting, it's important, and people are not contributing. You have 10 people in the room, and 2 people are doing all the talking. Yeah. And you know there's better ideas out there. So people need to learn how to contribute as well.
And then there are some people who are ready to contribute, and then there's a couple people who just want to make it a soapbox and blah, 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 blah. And they don't get to talk to anybody anywhere else any of the time, and so they use the meeting as a way to over-communicate, and it's frustrating. And the number of times I've been in meetings where the purpose was not clear, and so literally nothing got done.
Right.
I mean, how many meetings? I would bet 30% of the meetings, nobody has a clear idea of what actually happened in the meeting, whether it was a report or a discussion or a decision or whatever else. Nobody seems to know, and therefore nobody can figure out whether or not you achieve what you're supposed to achieve.
Pretty important to understand what the outcome of the meeting is.
Yeah. And then there's just too many of them. Do you feel like you're going to meetings all the time?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, not in my company, because we do things differently. No, but you're right. There's too many of them. Well, it's because we didn't get done what we need to get done the first meeting. So we have another meeting, and we'll probably talk about some reasons why that is. But yeah.
I think people go in, you know, if you told somebody we're going to make a decision in this meeting, I think people would show up just to see whether or not you could actually do what you said you're going to do. Because most other meetings, nobody gives a reason for what the meeting is. Like, gosh, do I have to go to that? And if it's not compelling, I got 7 other things to do. I got email, I got voicemail, I got a boss who wants me to do this or that or the other thing. I'm not
going to
go.
Yeah, and if you have such low expectations going to the meeting, your willingness to contribute and participate is just goes through the bottom. And we never improve them. And we don't have a format for them, so it just one bad meeting after another.
And I think if you think about it from a productivity perspective, like you and I both like the book Getting Things Done, and it talks about personal productivity. If you look at group productivity and you look at meetings It would be astounding to any alien productivity consultant to say, you guys spend this much time in meetings and no, there's no protocol, there's no process, there's no agreed upon way of doing it. I mean, when it comes to pay, everybody expects to get their pay every 2 weeks or every month, and there's a way of doing it, and it gets done. And
it's the same way every time.
And you know if it doesn't get done because people scream bloody murder. No, we ought to have the same thing for meetings, as important as they are, because clearly we're doing a lot of them. If we're doing a lot of something that's not important, we're really off track.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay, we admit it. Meetings are important. Fine, we're going to have them. Let's do them right.
Right.
Okay.
And doing them right it's easy. There are 10 things that you need to do. We're not going to talk about all 10 today because we probably won't get through it. We're going to talk about 5 of them today, and we'll talk about the next 5 on the next podcast. Possibly, we may need to do a third podcast to cover some questions that may get directed to us at our email or get posted on the website. But so there's going to be at least 2 shows, possibly a third. But 10 things. Pre-publish an agenda, number one.
Got to have an agenda, right?
Start on time.
Yep.
Set some ground rules at the beginning.
This is something that most people know about starting on time, but the ground rules thing, really powerful.
Yeah,
really powerful.
We're going to talk a little bit more about that. Stick to the agenda.
Right.
Use a parking lot. Parking lot? What?
Yeah. Some people call it a bin, but... Yeah.
I like parking lot.
Yeah.
Fix responsibilities.
That's my personal favorite.
What, who, when.
Right.
Finish on time. Right. That is as important as starting on time.
Yep.
Otherwise, people will not participate.
Right.
Publish the minutes. Continuous improve. You got to create a policy, a procedure for improving
meeting
performance.
Taking a look.
And getting a facilitator.
Right.
Those 10 things.
Right.
Today we're going to talk about the first 5.
Right.
Okay, so first one, pre-publish an agenda. I assume that meeting name, start and stop times.
Sure. And you know what, Mike? Let's just mention here, we're going to go ahead and post some of this stuff to the website afterwards so that by the time people get this podcast, isn't that the plan?
Yeah, we'll listen to the podcast. We'll create an outline of what we've covered
what
here. Because it's going to be a lot.
Right.
So we'll create a PowerPoint or some kind of documentation that you can go to the website. By the time they listen to it, we'll have it up there.
And some people are already grabbing our documents and putting them on their websites too. They're saying thank you. So please come and get it and use it how you see fit. If it makes your meetings better, that's why we're doing it.
Absolutely.
Here at ManagerTools.com. I'll tell you, and we'll also have a sample agenda, an agenda template, so it'll make it real easy to do an agenda. I will tell you this. Here's the mistake people make in agendas, and if you get past this, the rest of it's really pretty easy. We'll go through what an agenda actually has on it, but here's the fundamental mistake. Most people's agendas have 2 columns, okay? They have time, and they have, or I'm sorry, they don't have time. They have item, and they have owner. Like, for instance, if you're supposed to cover A and I'm supposed to cover B. That is not an agenda. An agenda that says we're going to talk about 4 things is not an agenda. An agenda is items and a time associated with them.
Yep.
Okay? Now, what people then do next is they go, oh, okay, well, good. I need to put a duration on there. And so they put an item and a duration. And that's a mistake as well. So let's walk through how to do the right, what are the basic things to put on an agenda. And it's really simple. It's always 1 page long. You don't want to make, and we're talking about the vast majority of business meetings that last an hour, 90 minutes at the most. Okay. We'll talk more about time later. But basically, you got to have the meeting name. And if it's not a standing meeting, like weekly one-on-one or standing morning meeting or monthly update or CEO's update or staff meeting, the weekly staff meeting, it can be something as simple as decision on Project X. Whatever the case might be, you put a meeting name, you put the start and stop time up at the top. It's going to start at 9, it's going to finish at 10. You put the location, and if you need to put directions on there, great. It could be as simple as conference room C. If everybody in your team is coming to the meeting, everybody knows where conference room C is, fine. But all too often, we leave the location off, and then, of course, somebody's coming from somewhere else, and they don't know where the conference room is. Or they don't know where the meeting is because you didn't put a location down. You got to put the leader on it, who's running it. And if we do use a facilitator, which we recommend, that you put the facilitator as well. You put the attendees, so everybody knows who else is coming. Sometimes people don't know why they're being invited to the meeting, but if they see the attendees and say, oh, we're working on some projects together, that'd be a good one for me to go to because I see their names on it as well. And then for each item on the agenda, there are 3 key pieces of that information. It is a start time, the item itself, what you're going to do, discuss, decide, whatever, and then an owner. In most meetings that we have, let's say a weekly team meeting, for instance, let's say every Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock, it would not surprise me if Mike is the team leader, if 7 out of 10 items or 5 out of 7 items have Mike as the owner. That's fine. At some point, you'll begin to delegate more and people on your team will have ownership of individual items. But I really wouldn't get too tied around the axle around the owner issue. The thing that people miss so often is the start time of an item. So I'll give you an example. At 8 o'clock, welcome to the meeting. And it says Mike. We're going to pretend in this particular example that Mike's the owner. 8:05, item 1, decide deadline for Project X. Mike is still the owner. Now, it said 8:05. What we assume from that is that the welcome is done at 8:05. Okay? You don't put down the welcome last 5 minutes over on the right. You put the start time for the welcome.
It's the same thing. Same thing, isn't it?
No, well, it technically is the same thing, but it sends a funny message. If you put down a bunch of durations on the right, Mike, here's what happens. People start doing math about 25 minutes into the meeting. Okay, that was supposed to take 4, but it took 7. This was supposed to take 3, but it took 9. This was and they literally, you see them almost using mental calculators about where are we in the meeting. You should be able to look at your agenda, and every single time you look at the agenda and the clock and you think about what you're talking about, you should know exactly where you are in the meeting. Because if the first thing takes 55 minutes and it was only supposed to take 10, that doesn't mean you're going to give the rest of the meeting time to all those. You're not going to give all those other times to those items. You're going to be done at 2 o'clock.
Right.
Or in this case, if we start at 2, it's going to be done at 3. So if you're over by 5 minutes, if it's 8:07 and you're still on the welcome, you're over. And somebody
right.
needs to stand up and say, hey, time out. We're over on the welcome. Are we going to get to item
right.
number 1?
When you're down in item 5, if you just
right.
have durations, it's hard. It's
exactly.
just like, you know, I fly. I'm a pilot.
Yes,
you do
right.
You do a flight plan on each of your waypoints.
Right.
You have a expected time you're going to be there. It's not all durations. You have
yeah.
an expected time.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
So if you're 3 minutes behind, you know you're 3 minutes behind. Now, if it says 8:10, you're supposed to be moving on to item number 3, and you're still on item 2, you might choose to give it one more minute. But you're taking a minute away from something else. I don't know what that thing is. You might say, okay, we're finishing this one up. Or even better, you're going to say, we're going to stop now because we're not going to get there. And 10 more minutes is not going to solve our problem. And you stick to the agenda. We'll talk about sticking to the agenda later. But each item has a start time, an item, what you're doing, the action you're taking, and then the owner. Again, I wouldn't get too wrapped around the axle about the owner. On a team meeting or many meetings, it can have every single item could have the same owner. Okay, but you ought to get in the habit of having that owner on there. And then the key thing is that start time. And the next item's start time is the finish time for the previous
right.
agenda item. Simple as that. That's it. And then you want to have it distributed promptly. If it's a standing meeting, it's the same agenda every time. You can send it out a day or two before or even a couple hours before. But handing people an agenda when they walk into a meeting is a way to ensure that it's going to take more time.
Absolutely.
So sending out a day in advance. Now, I know there are people out there going, I don't have time to go to meetings as it is, and you want me to send out agendas in advance? The problem is nobody's prepared for the agenda. You start sending out that agenda in advance, your meetings will finish on time.
And you'll get the objective met.
Yeah, exactly.
So you won't have to meet. So you won't have to meet again.
Exactly.
Now, agendas for every meeting? Are there circumstances where I don't need an agenda?
Sure. I mean, there are some meetings, you know, we recommend, and this is part of our overall manager tools protocol of how to manage your folks and manage your time, that you should have, for instance, a stand-up meeting with your admin if you have an admin. You don't need an agenda published for that, but you ought to have a standing deal that is 50 minutes long, and for 10 minutes you go over the calendar, and for 5 minutes you talk about big issues that you may need help with, and your assistant may need help from you with. That's a very simple kind of short,
but
unofficial
it,
agenda.
It is an agenda.
It is.
It's just
not published in advance and sent out because the meeting is only 2 people. On the other hand, a longer meeting, an hour-long meeting, absolutely, I would have it. Almost anything. At Intel, which does meetings exceptionally well, they have a rule that if there's not an agenda and you don't know why you're there and you can't be sure of what the purpose of the meeting is, you don't have to go. And you've got carte blanche to not go. So they really reinforce that by saying there's got to be an agenda. You got to explain to me why I'm going to be there because I could be effective somewhere else, and you got to show me how I contribute. So I believe that's a better
that's a good
way
rule.
To treat.
That's a good rule.
Yeah, really good.
I would have had a lot less meetings.
Yeah. So that's an agenda. We covered. Feel good about agenda?
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, good.
So next point we said was got to start on time.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. People say, well, people come to the meeting late. I'll tell you a story, very brief. Client called me once, said, Mark, I got a meeting that starts at 9:15 every morning. And it used to start at 8 o'clock. And I'd really like, you know, we've got a problem. Everybody's showing up at like 9:30. I said, well, why are you starting at 9:15? Well, it used to start at 8 o'clock, and we moved it back to 8:15, but everybody started, because everybody was showing up at 8:15, and then the people started showing up at 8:30. I said, oh, my gosh. He said, what do we do? I said, that's easy. Start the meeting next week at 8 o'clock. He said, well, nobody will be there. I said, well, heck, nobody's there now. What difference does it make? Send out a note saying you're going to start at 8 o'clock. Send out an agenda. Tell them what you're going to do. When they don't show up until 8:15, say, gee, nobody was here, so I covered everything. We're done. Here's your assignments. Here's how it works. Actually step up, start the meeting on time, whether there's nobody there or not, and then close the meeting when nobody's there after 5 or 10 minutes. People will get the message. They'll start showing up on time. Yeah. And you know what? They did that. The next week, nobody was there. Everybody complained. And the following week, he started at 8, and magically, everybody was there on time. And they grumbled for a week, and then they got over it. Whereas they had been doing this for about 6 months, and they had been moving back in 15-minute increments the whole time. Everybody laughing at the boss.
Yeah, a little pain judiciously applied.
Yes, yeah. Okay, so what you do is you start precisely on time. Now, this means you have to be a little bit early. I mean, you have to be a few minutes early. You can't walk in at 2 o'clock and say, hey, guys, okay, let me just rearrange my stuff here. I just came from meeting with the boss. I want to rearrange this. Give me just a minute. No, that's inappropriate. There are 6 people or 10 people who work for you, and they're going to all stand and watch you shuffle papers. Unacceptable. So you have to be 5 or 10 minutes early. And when the clock says 2 o'clock, you look up and you say, we're starting. Now, people say to me, gee, well, what if somebody important's not there? Well, we're going to let it go. We're going to start on time. And if they say, well, we can't do anything without Bob. Well, Bob's the second person on the agenda. We're going to skip Bob's item, and we're going to go to Jerry. And then we're going to go to Terry, and then we're going to Jane, and then we're going to go to Danny. Simple as that. And people say, well, gosh, what are we going to do? What happens? If Bob's not there, I'm going to give Bob some feedback if he reports to me. You know, why aren't you at, when you don't come to meetings, here's what happens. We miss stuff that you need to report on. I really like to hear from you. We waste a lot of the team's time and so on. All you have to do is 3 or 4 meetings that you run, start them precisely on time. And everybody who works around, who comes to that meeting, will start showing up on time. It'll also point out those people who don't get the culture that you want to be respectful of their time. That's one of the reasons you start on time, is you're respectful of everybody's time, not just yours. That it will make more clear who's being late because they want to be late. Because every adult in a major corporation or in a small corporation or running a restaurant or anything else today, they know when and where they're supposed to be, and they're choosing to be somewhere else. Now, they may be with a customer. They may choose to be late, and that's fine. We're not going to chastise them for that if they make an intelligent decision. But if they're just at their desk working on something and, oh, I forgot, after 3 or 4 meetings, we want to give them some feedback. Hey, when you're not on time, it affects team performance because we're all in a meeting. Never, ever, ever wait. Even if there's one other person in the room, you say, well, we're going to start. We know they're smart people. We care about them, and they're not here. We're going to start, and we're going to do the best we can. And pretty soon, in every single situation I've ever consulted on meeting effectiveness, you start on time. People start showing up on time. You never wait, period. Now, what do you do about latecomers? You know, let's say we've got 10 people in a meeting, and 7 of them are there. And so 3 people are going to stream in at 5, 10, and 15 minutes late, for instance. My recommendation on that, Mike, is to ignore them. Just to ignore them. We don't point them out. We don't try to make them feel bad, because that's not really feedback. That's just embarrassment. And we're, you know what? Management is not about embarrassment. That's not the way to inflict pain on people, if you will. But if they're late, I assume that they had a good reason for being late. If they set up a pattern, I'm going to give them some feedback about their pattern. But basically, they come in, and I don't want to focus on them. I want to focus on the work. I might say, hey, Bob, come on in, but that's it. Now, what about the co-chair of the meeting or the boss who says, why don't you catch me up a little bit? I'm sorry I'm late. Why don't you catch me up? What do you think we should do about that?
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Your boss comes in and she's 15 minutes late. She says, okay, catch me up.
Well, first thing I do is I'd beg off a little bit and say, hey, can I catch up after the meeting or something along those lines? Now, you can't disrespect them in the meeting. So if the person insists on being caught up, then you're going to catch them up.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Actually, I can disrespect him in a meeting. I have many times.
Yeah.
My boss comes in and says, I'm sorry I'm late. I'd like to catch up. You know what? We'll do that at the break, or we'll do that at the end of the meeting. Right now, we're on item number 3. We're doing this. I'm doing it. And I have never had a boss ever chew my butt for that.
Really?
Yeah, never. Not once. And we're talking pretty senior people. You know, they're making $500,000 a year, and I'm just a lowly consultant on the outside. Just so you know, this is the way we're going to do it. What they actually do is they appreciate the respect you're showing everybody else in the room. And the vast majority of bosses are not arrogant enough to think that time ought to stop for them. There are some that are that way, and you may be forced. They may say, I'm sorry, I'm going to ask everybody to leave while I chew your tail. Okay, you take your tail chewing, and then you say, all right, I'll remember to catch up. And then maybe you give them some feedback. You see whether or not they can tolerate some feedback. Hey, when you're late to meetings, here's what happens. Everybody sits around and watches a spar back and forth about who's going to run the meeting, when in fact, it's pretty obvious it's my meeting. Nevertheless, I would say ignore them and don't catch them up, and catch them up on a break or at the end of the meeting. If it's an hour-long meeting, you're not going to have a break, and so catch them up at the end of the meeting. And then give, if they report to you, give them some feedback. Hey, I'm sorry we can't catch you up. You know, may I give you some feedback? When you come in late, it takes me more time to give you feedback at the end of the meeting because you didn't come in on time.
Yeah.
Sounds like we have a little difference of opinion.
Yeah,
I can see a little look on your face.
Oh, boy. I don't know. I think there's going
to – I'll tell you what. The team will love you. The team will go to hell and back for the manager who says to the boss, I'm sorry, we're not going to do that right now. We're on track on the meeting. We want to stay on track on the meeting. I bet you they do it.
Mm.
Team would love it.
You know, Mike's – I don't know. Obviously, you can tell by looking at me. I'm a little uncomfortable because I found that if I put my boss in an embarrassing – I've lost – trust. I've embarrassed them in front of my subordinates or in front of their peers or in front of their subordinates. And
how did you embarrass them?
By highlighting their failure to show up at the meeting.
No, I'm not going to highlight them. I'm going to ignore them. If they come bustling in, unless they're the critical part of the meeting.
Oh, I'd absolutely ignore them. I wouldn't stop and say, oh, Bob, thanks for joining the meeting. Let me catch up on where we are.
No.
I would just continue to drive on.
Continue driving on.
I think where we were disagreeing is if my boss asked me to catch them up, to deny them that request.
Right.
That's where I feel a little bit more uncomfortable.
Let me suggest a compromise. We're 5 minutes into a 2-minute discussion and say, Bob, if you can hold on just a minute, let's get us through this item and then we'll do a quick update for you.
There you go.
Okay? How does that work?
That works for me.
You would do that. I would not do that. I'm sorry, we haven't caught the first 15 minutes. We're not critical. I'll catch you up at the end of the meeting. And if she said back to me, you know what? That's not acceptable for me. I'd say, I'm sorry, we're in a meeting. And if she made me get everybody in my team out of the meeting so she could, you know, take it out on me.
Well,
I consider that. What would she do?
Oh, I think it would be a conversation after the meeting. My experience is most would have the conversation
with
you.
She'd stew during the next 30 minutes or whatever.
Absolutely. And wouldn't participate fully and would be thinking more about how I disrespected her versus contributing to the meeting. And so
to me, that's not disrespect. She started the disrespect by showing up late to the meeting. The meeting agenda was published and so on. And that's just to me, that's just a gross power play on her part.
Okay, so here's.
Would you do that to somebody, Mike? Would you expect to get caught up? Would you have 10 people sitting around a room who were all there on time?
No, absolutely.
Okay, so why would you tolerate it from her? Because she's your boss, right?
She's my boss, yeah.
See,
that's somebody had sent us some feedback on the whole military thing, and that's one of the things, you know, you take your orders and salute and move on, and maybe I haven't, after 20 years, still haven't gotten...
Yeah, I've moved on.
...gotten past it. But I tell you what I would do. What I would do, I'm assuming my assumption in this conversation has been that I'm trying to implement some new behaviors within at least my organization.
Right.
And in this case, my boss is going to attend. So I'd be wise to have the conversation with her prior to the meeting, say, hey, just want to let you know that I'm trying to change some effectiveness and some behavior in my organization. I'm going to start the meeting. I'm going to start it on time. And
that's pretty rare for around here, so I just want to let you know in advance. Yeah, everybody comes in late, you come to
the meeting. Right, so if she wants to be late, then at least she's making a choice, and she's not going to be surprised by the conversation.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure I'm all the way with you, so we can agree to disagree on that one, but at least I'd level set her, and I think then we have a better chance of being successful.
And there's another compromise. I could say, I'd be happy to catch you up, blah, 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 catch her up. Then at the end of the meeting, say, I'm sorry we didn't get to everything, folks. The meeting's over. It's 3 o'clock. I told you we'd be done at 3. We're done. And then I'd ask for some time with her later, not right after the meeting. I'd say, hey, listen, can I give you some feedback? Or, hey, can I share with you what I'm doing with my meetings? Can I share with you that 10 minutes really took time away from the meeting? I'd really like to run my meetings where we start on time and finish on time. And I can just see a boss saying, yeah, wouldn't that be great? I said, well, we can either complain about how the meeting structure is around here, or we can do something about it. These meetings are going to run on time. If you want to come in late, that's great. Is there any way that I could catch you up afterwards? Or is there any other way we can do that so we don't have 10 people sitting around waiting for you to get caught up? I'm not suggesting that you weren't doing something more important. I'm just saying, in that you were, do we need to have 10 people sit around and wait while you get caught up?
Right.
I'd probably say it a little bit more judiciously than that.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now we're getting closer.
Good.
Bob and Sue have a meeting right after this. They got to get to, can I catch you up later on the information?
Yeah.
For example, something like that.
Good.
Excellent. We should do a little poll. Okay. Mike versus Mark. Okay.
I think I'd lose.
If your boss isn't. That doesn't mean it's right, though.
We
know that, right?
Yeah.
So
I would encourage our readers to write in and say, you know, show at manager-tools.com and say, hey, this is what I do, and it works. But don't tell us you start meetings late waiting for your boss, because that ain't the
answer. No. We can agree on that.
So what's next?
Stick to the agenda.
Oh, gosh. You know, it's one thing to have an agenda, and it's another thing to ignore it. If you have an agenda and then you ignore it, and the classic one is a 10-minute agenda item that you're 20 minutes into a discussion on and you still haven't cut off debate.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a hard one. I think this is something we're going to come back to in the next two shows or maybe the third show and talk about some techniques on how to stick to the agenda, because this can be tough.
Well, no, actually, it's really easy to stick to the agenda. It's just hard to actually introduce conflict. And, you know, I tell you what, a lot I've been reading lately, Mike, about, we want to have consensus and we want to build. All the senior, the really smart guys and gals that I read, you know what they say? They say conflict is inevitable. You should embrace conflict. Senior leaders in major corporations say, boy, we fought about that strategy for days and there were still two or three people who didn't get it, but they were willing to implement the strategy because the CEO said, this is where we're going. It's not all kumbaya all the time. Sometimes we need to introduce conflict. It's as simple as this. You want to stick to the agenda? At 8:20. When the 8:10 agenda item is supposed to be done and you're 2 minutes away from doing it, you say, okay, it's 8:20. We're supposed to move on to the next item. We can finish this in 1 minute and I'll give us a minute, or we can just stop right here and we can start with the next agenda item. That's all you have to do. And sometimes it's the boss saying, we're going to take 1 more minute and make a decision. Or you have Bob, you have 1 minute to wrap up. Or Terry, you know, I'm sorry, I can only give you 1 more minute, and then we have to move on.
Or create an action to go gather additional information so you can come back at a subsequent meeting to resolve the issue.
But the way you stick on time is the leader, or in this case, we're going to talk about facilitators in the next podcast. But the way you stay on time is at 8:20, you move on to the next item. Now, here's what I do at 8:18. The facilitator, or the leader in this case, if you don't have a facilitator, says, hey, you got 2 minutes, Bob. And actually, let me be more subtle. I said that wrong. What you say is, at 8:18, you say, 2 minutes. You let them know. You got 2 minutes.
Right.
We're on the agenda for 10 minutes here. We don't have all day. If you think we have all day, that's why you hate meetings, because they start late and they finish an hour after they're supposed to. So at 8:18, you say, 2 minutes. Now, subtle difference. At 8:19, you say, Bob, you've got 1 minute. Now I'm using their name. Now I've gotten their attention. And at 8:20, you say, Bob, I'm sorry, we're going to have to move on. I know you're still giving your report. Can you wrap up? You got 30 seconds. Wrap up real quick. Okay? 30 seconds out of 10 minutes is no big deal. And you let them wrap up, but they're still not wrapped up. So, Bob, I'm so sorry, but we got to cut you off. Ask me to get time on the next agenda item. And then if Bob reports to me, I'm going to give Bob some feedback about, hey, you've got 10 minutes. He said, well, I told you I wouldn't be able to finish. No, I gave you 10 minutes. I want to work with you on how to finish something in 10 minutes. Okay, we all don't have as much time as Bob may want. Or for that matter, if it's a meeting with my boss, how much time I want. If he gives me 5 minutes, I got to get my point across in 5 minutes. So at 8:20, you say, I'm sorry, Bob, I just got to cut you off. And if Bob says, well, I want to keep on talking, you say, Bob, I'm sorry. It's my meeting, and we got 10 other people here, and we've got Terry wants to brief, and Jane wants to brief, and Mark wants to brief, and Jim wants to brief. Everybody's got to have their time. We're going to stop here. We'll come back later. If we have time, we'll come back to your topic. If not, we'll put it on the agenda for next meeting.
Right.
And, yeah, Bob is a little bit irritated. And how does everybody else in the room feel? They love it.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank gosh, we're actually sticking to the agenda. And you know what? Do that 2 or 3 times, and what will people start doing? They'll finish in 7 or 8 minutes, and your meetings will finish early. Okay?
You know,
now, can the you know, using reminders is a good thing. Being respectful. Hey, Bob, you got 1 more minute. Bob, I'm sorry. I'm out. You know, and when I do it, I kind of slump my shoulders. I lean forward a little bit. I don't say, Bob, your time is up. I lean forward. I kind of shrug my shoulders a little bit. I lower my voice. I'm so sorry, Bob, but time is up. We need to move on.
You know, I missed something earlier. I don't want to take us back. I missed something earlier, though. One of the steps we talked about, or one of the 10 things. The third one I think I mentioned was set ground rules.
We didn't
talk about the ground rules, because a lot of our conversation, of the argument we had earlier, is solved by the fact that we have established set of ground rules that people know, hey, look, we're going to start on time, we're going to stick to these times. So, yeah. I think we've been talking about it in the context where these ground rules are not clear. This conversation with Bob becomes a piece of cake once he understands the ground rules.
Yeah, and the ground rules for your weekly meeting should generally be the same all the time. And they're as simple as some of the things we're covering here. We start on time, we finish on time. 8:10 to 8:20 means you got to be done at 8:20. Here's what I'm going to do when it becomes 8:18, 8:19, and 8:20. And I know that probably some managers out there are going to say, gee, that seems kind of trivial. But meetings eat up an enormous part of our time. I don't know that many people who think meetings are good. they spend hours in meetings and they don't get anything done, and then they finish late and so on, as we've already covered. So being very, very clear about some of these very things, setting up some clear ground rules. And you know what? Next meeting, let's talk about what the standard ground rules are. We can do that. Shouldn't be too difficult.
Good.
So sticking to the agenda. Also, there are times when the agenda can be wrong. You may discover that it's rare, but oh my gosh, we really have just uncovered an enormous mess. But what you don't do is blow the rest of the agenda and say, oh, we're just going to blow everything else off, unless everyone decides that it's really trivial and we need to cover this. What you say is, we don't have enough time to cover everything we'd planned on covering. We need to make a choice. My general recommendation is, if item number 3 is going to take an hour when in fact we thought it would take 15 minutes, you say, you know what, let's have another meeting with just those people affected by item number 3. Well, let's still cover everything else we're supposed to cover in this meeting, and then we'll come back at a separate meeting later in the day or tomorrow, and we'll cover item 3 with a 30-minute meeting all by itself, or an right. hour meeting all by itself. You want to be sensitive to the fact that there are crazy things that happen all of a sudden. You could walk in and say, I'm sorry, but we just acquired a new company, or we were just acquired. We're going to wipe this clean, and we're going to talk about what just happened in the news today or in the press or whatever. That's fine, but that's rare. That's 3 or 4 right. meetings a year. It's not every week, which is what most people treat agendas as. Well, let's just throw it out if we don't like it. That's not the way to run meetings.
Right.
Okay. All right. What's next? We started on time. We stuck to the agenda. We published an agenda.
Using a parking lot.
Oh, boy. This is...
We're not talking about for your cars or no. having a place to park.
And while I said fixing responsibilities is my favorite one, I just love doing that at the end of each agenda item. Parking lot is a very, very powerful tool. And people who have never used it before, when they first use it, they say, wow, boy, that really, really works. And it's simple as this. A parking lot is a place for issues that come up in the meeting that are not on the agenda. So let's say we're talking about quarterly sales projections, and somebody says, well, hey, listen, before we do that, we really need to talk about the logistical problem we've got. That brings up the fact that we're having trouble sending in our sales reports or whatever else. And the meeting facilitator or the manager has to say, whoa, time out. That's not on the agenda. We're talking about sales forecasts here. It's important. We're going to throw it in the parking lot. We're not scheduled to talk about that. It's valuable, but it's not on the agenda. And you can do it a number of different ways. I like putting a flip chart on the wall so that anybody can go up and write it on the flip chart, right, in big letters, so that we can come back to it at the end of the meeting. Or you can have a piece of paper in the middle of the table that somebody writes on, or the leader can write it down. I find that if it's visual to everybody, it's a little bit more effective because everybody remembers. It's a reminder that we've put something in the parking lot. But that keeps you from going down those rabbit trails and saying, okay, yeah, I know we want to talk about sales forecast, but we got to cover this logistical problem. And suddenly we spent 10 minutes on logistics.
Right.
It was third or fourth on our list, and we never got to the primary.
Yeah, some people will feel uncomfortable with the parking lot. But if you don't do that, your chances of staying on the agenda are incredibly small.
Right.
You got to do the parking lot. Otherwise, people don't have, just like in getting thing done, right? If you don't have a place to put it, it's cycling somebody's mind. This person, instead of thinking about what we're talking about, is thinking about how they're going to get the conversation turned back to whatever it is that they need to cover.
Exactly. Yeah. So at the end of the meeting, you've got 5 minutes for parking lot issues every single time. And there's a neat trick to that. Neat value that I'll come back in a minute. At the end, you don't actually handle every single item. In other words, let's say you wanted a 15-minute logistical discussion. You don't have a 15-minute logistical discussion in the last 5 minutes of the meeting. You simply say, okay, what are we going to do about the logistical thing? We can't solve it now, or maybe we can if it was a small item. We have to decide, can we get it done, whatever we need to get done in the next 5 minutes? If we can't, we say, okay, the way we're going to action that, because it's in the parking lot, is we're going to have another meeting, or Bob's going to make a recommendation, or whatever else. Or we're going to put it on our next agenda item, because it's not that critical. If it was, we would have had it on our agenda to begin with. So we don't actually solve the problem, but we decide how it's going to be solved so we can still finish on time. But here's the neat trick, Mike. You have an hour-long meeting, and the last 5 minutes from 2:55 until 3 o'clock is for the parking lot. 9 times out of 10, there's nothing in the parking lot. And you finish your meeting early, provided you've stuck to the agenda along the way. And if you want to go over a couple of minutes from 2:55 to 2:57, lucky you, you're still finishing early. So parking lots are a great buffer at the end of the meeting. It gives it gives you a place to offload items, and it still finishes you early very, very often.
All right, that's great. Okay, look. Wait, let's stop there.
You
know, we're trying to keep these things down to 30 or 40 minutes. We're
right.
about out of time. We respect our listeners' time as we respect ours. So we'll start with
setting ground rules.
Setting ground rules next time. We'll cover the other five pieces we talked about in terms of getting out of jail, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, meetings, we spend too much time in them. They're too darn important when you add up the number of people around the table and how much time they take. We ought to do them well, and it's easy to do them well, and this is the way to do them well.
If you do them effectively, how much time do you think the average manager could save in unproductive meetings each week?
10 hours.
10 hours?
10.
An entire...
2 hours a day.
An entire day.
Yeah.
Well, part of a day, and yeah. You know, for 14-hour days, but...
Yeah.
So if I can save an entire day of unproductive meetings, I think that's something I'll do.
Yeah.
Might be a habit worth developing. Yeah.
I actually think we could have a whole third section, not just of meetings, Mike, not just on questions. And we love questions, show@manager-tools.com. But just talking about some of the strategic meeting approaches. This is how to run a meeting. We're talking about how to run effective meetings. But there's a whole way of thinking about meetings, I think, that makes for an even more effective manager.
Oh, absolutely.
Manager.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, that's a show in and of itself.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things we could talk about there.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
Excellent.
Great. It's always great.
All right.
This stuff.
We'll see you all next week.
All right.
Well, until next time, thanks again for joining us here on Manager Tools. And as always, you can find us on the web at www.manager-tools.com. And you can send us feedback to show@manager-tools.com. So until next week, have a great one, and we'll see you then.